This is Dan Kelson once again, doing, you know, I've lost track of how many podcasts these are. I'm going to have to start putting a number in front of these so I can keep track for myself at least. Today, I've hunted down Len Milbauer, and we're going to talk about some pretty interesting stuff today. Len is the Learnertainment Trainer. The podcast title we decided on was Learnertainment, Making Learning Engaging and Entertaining. And learning can mean many things. So it could be anything from e-learning to a keynote to day-long sessions to half an hour, whatever. We're going to try and narrow it down to what does Learnertainment mean and how people can prep to do, say, a 45 to 60-minute presentation of some kind where hopefully knowledge actually transfers from the speaker to the people participating, and it sticks in some way. That's kind of a primary tenet of this. And you can find out more about Len Milbauer at www.offbeattraining.com. If you want to get in touch with him by email, it's Len Milbauer, which is LennMillbauer, at offbeattraining.com. And again, so it's Len is the Learnertainment Trainer. Len, if you could give a quick intro on what's your background. Actually, before I get into that, the way that I stumbled onto Len was I'm, as people have probably figured out at this point, interested in many things. Amazon is both a source of inspiration and problems for my wallet. So I stumbled onto an e-learning vein recently with a podcast I did with Clark Aldrich on e-learning and simulation and games. And somehow I ended up, through the magic of Amazon, landing on some of Len's books, and we can talk about those a bit as well. And then in doing some research on him, found out that we both, at different points in time, both went to Berklee College of Music here in Boston. So we didn't know each other for there, but that was intriguing enough to me to say, well, you know, e-learning and the guy went to Berklee, I need to talk to him. Let's see what he's all about. We've had some brief discussions already. And I thought, hey, why not apply this to some of the more off-technology topics that I would usually cover? And, you know, I present a lot, so I'm always interested in learning more about this as well. So beyond the Berklee aspect, Len, what's your background? What led you to being the Learnertainment Trainer?
Well, hello, Dan, and hello to anyone who might be listening to this. Yeah, I am the Learnertainment Trainer, and I started on a stage when I was 5 years old. I was worked with string puppets, hand puppets, became a magician, dabbled in ventriloquism, never got very good at it. Traveled throughout New York State and performed at state and county fairs all through my childhood. Was quite the childhood prodigy. Then I got interested in music, and because I was curious how the Beatles in Blood, Sweat, and Tears made those sounds they made, and went to Berklee College of Music, got a degree in music composition, and then went on the road for 10 years. And this may seem like a side point to speaking, but in truth it is central, because we did something unusual where most bands would have a playlist. Now, for those of you who may not know, a playlist means that these are the songs we play and these are the orders we play them in, come heck or high water.
Right.
Well, I stood in the bandstand and looked at the club and would call songs. And so I discovered over time that songs could control the mood of the folks in the room. You know, one song would make people happy, another would make them dance, another would make them sit down if they were getting too rambunctious, and when placed properly, songs would help sell liquor, and after all, that's what the club owners wanted.
Right.
We were a magic music act, so we do things like we play Lucy in the Sky with Diamonds and float the singer across the dance floor. Michael Jackson's Thriller and Burn Her Alive. She, the poor girl was always black and blue. But here's the thing. Drunks are not known for their long attention spans.
Yep.
And it wasn't until many years later that I got into the corporate and the collegiate arena that I began to realize that drunks and modern learners have a lot in common. Neither can focus.
Right.
So then I also discovered that the same techniques I used to call songs and decide which bit of entertainment to do in a nightclub had application to the college classes I was teaching, and just started applying it and realized that Learnertainment is a way to reach people.
Right. Okay. Well, that's a great backdrop, because that helps explain how you ended up in this situation. As I confessed, you know, even though I went to Berklee as well and studied music synthesis and songwriting in my case, I haven't really done all that much on the audio realm to enhance my presentation style, I guess, and that's actually part of the reason I've jumped into podcasting is to sort of return to those roots.
Yeah, we're going to have to work with you on that.
Yeah. Well, so let's define it. So other than a catchy phrase, which I think I now have within my tongue, what is Learnertainment? And I guess we have 8 principles.
Right. Well, Learnertainment is simply the combining of learning and entertainment. And the word came together for me when I was teaching a college class. I had these 2 girls in the class who were attending the class for the 3rd time. No, I don't mean this was the 3rd class in the semester. I mean this was their 3rd semester in the same class.
Right.
And they just would not pay attention. So they couldn't get it, and they couldn't graduate without this class. But yet, there they were, sitting there talking about the movie Titanic and how wonderful it was and how they were going back to see it for the 4th time. Now, excuse me, Dan, there was no mystery there. The ship sinks.
Right.
And they were paying for that, and I know the government was paying for their class. So I started thinking, well, what does entertainment have that I don't have? Why don't they rave about me?
Right.
And I started using, I started looking at the principles Hollywood uses for a movie, for musicians use, the principles I use in the nightclubs, and being a magician, the principles a magician uses, and applying them in the classroom. And I found these girls actually graduated. And it was then that it was basically the smooshing together of learning and entertainment to create Learnertainment.
Mm-hmm.
Under this theory, I read something from an advertising book that said that the 3 goals of advertising are to capture attention, maintain interest, and move the prospect to favorable action.
Mm-hmm.
And when I read those, I thought, gee, that's a lot like a training program.
Right.
Or rather, let me amend that. It's like a training program or a presentation should be.
Right, yeah.
But more often it is get them in the seats, make them stay there, and get happy smile sheets at the end where everyone says you're wonderful.
Right.
But instead, it should be move them to favorable action.
Yep.
And entertainment, there are many things that reach people emotionally, but entertainment can uniquely move them to do something. And so I put the 2 together.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And so there's the core of it. And you have 8 principles surrounding
this?
Yes. Okay. Let's go through those.
And let me candidly say there may be more. There certainly aren't less.
Right.
From time to time, I play with adding another one. But I've always discovered these are the core 8. And, you know, I believe in life a unifying set of principles makes the difference between random floundering and purposeful activity.
Okay, yeah.
So these are the principles that I use whenever I'm doing a speech. And I do a lot of speeches. I do a lot of presentations, and I do a lot of trainings. And
mm-hmm.
All my work is focused on getting people to understand these 8 things and apply them.
Okay.
So
well,
the first principle is that emotion creates memory.
Okay.
A lot of training programs, a lot of presentations are designed sequentially. Like the presenter gets a list of things they want to say and puts them in an order.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the extent of it.
Right.
The problem is A to B to C may work, but by the time you get to Z, it may no longer connect with A.
Sure.
So it's very logical. And in fact, in instructional design, most design is almost devoid of emotion. But yet, the brain responds to emotion. We're hardwired to put our guard up at the hint of any trouble.
Right.
And there's been some studies that have discovered, and I'm going to oversimplify because I'm not a brain surgeon, but there's been some studies that suggest basically that the holistic centers of the brain, what we used to call the right hemisphere,
mm-hmm.
is looking for trouble and panic. And the left hemisphere, the logical centers, are in control until the right hemisphere panics.
Right.
Now, if you doubt the truth of that, you can think of any situation where you've had a group of people together and you've announced a change and everybody went crazy for 5 minutes till they settled down. So rather than, like most presentations, reaching the logical portions of the brain that are ready to listen anyway,
mm-hmm.
what I try to do is infuse everything with an emotional connection to evoke emotion. And if you will, in essence, what you want to do is babysit the emotional centers so that the logical centers can pay attention.
Sure, Right. Makes sense.
So the principle is try to do everything you can emotionally. And now some of the later principles explain that a bit more. But one simple example is the act of telling stories.
Okay, yeah. And there's a whole storytelling movement that's been afoot from, we've been covering knowledge management for a number of years, you know, probably 8 to 10 years now, and storytelling comes up very frequently in that world as a way to actually get knowledge from one place to another.
So the simple point in principle one is if you want to move them to favorable action, you have to capture their attention, maintain their interest, and you do that not through logic. You do that through emotion.
Okay.
Positive emotion, not negative.
Yes, right. Okay.
Okay, principle two is laughter produces positive energy. It's really hard to be angry while you're laughing. Now, some people do it, but it's hard.
Right.
And you think about what is going on when people enter a presentation, a training arena. Like if they're entering training, they're adults. Entering training means admitting you don't know everything in front of people maybe you haven't met before.
Right.
In front of an instructor you don't know who may affect your career.
Sure.
And perhaps being required to attend by leadership. It's a very negative situation, particularly in those situations where people have been forced to attend.
Yes.
So, but yeah, when people laugh together, they become communal. They share. It's not us against them. It's us and us.
Right.
So anyone who seeks to establish emotional connection should harness humor. And that's the action step for two.
Okay.
Using laughter, looking for ways to use laughter. Now, most presenters will never be Bill Cosby or Eddie Murphy.
Right.
But the simple truth is it's not necessary to be mildly amusing is often enough because trainees will laugh at the silliest little thing because they're so tense.
Right, right. And that's like some dry kindling. It doesn't take all that much to set it on fire.
Yeah, that's a good metaphor for it because that's the truth. And the tension is palatable in a classroom. And the sooner you can, as a presenter, do something that makes them laugh, and all the better if it's making them laugh at you, and certainly not at them.
Sure.
Or
yeah, that's
laugh
tricky.
With you. Or if you can find a way to laugh with them, then you're not the enemy anymore.
Right. Bringing laughter into it, again, to your first point, does help to babysit or short circuit or whatever metaphor people prefer on the logic versus the panic reaction.
Yeah, because what happens then is the right hemisphere or the holistic centers, however you want to describe it, says, well, gee, we're having a good time. Maybe this isn't so bad. Maybe I can lighten up a little bit.
Right.
Now that happens in nanoseconds, and it's never thought through in the way I just put it.
Right.
But it's basically what goes on. Because, see, the brain is concerned with two things, survival or pleasure.
Mm-hmm.
And once survival is ensured, then it's got to use all that extra brain power that's up there.
Right.
So it looks for pleasurable things. It's not an accident that food and sex and sleep are pleasurable.
Right.
So if a trainee can have a positive, pleasurable, emotional experience in your training room or your presentation room, there's a better chance they'll pay attention and move to favorable action.
Right. Okay. Works for me. I try to work laughter in personally.
All right, so principle three, then, is visuals aid retention. And there's an old saying that a picture is worth 100 words, 1,000 words.
Yeah.
I think it's probably worth 1,000,000 words.
Okay.
You know, you think about what they do in a movie. They don't say the hero is reading a newspaper. They show you a newspaper.
Right.
You see it. You don't need to explain it.
Right.
And yet, presenters tend to talk and talk and talk and state the obvious.
Right.
But nobody ever, I don't think, unless you're listening to Einstein maybe, nobody leaves saying, God, I wish that guy would have talked some more.
Right.
So you can do things with visuals that really make your point. And
sure.
Hollywood has pushed us all in this direction. If you think about Sesame Street and how kids learn these days,
yep.
It's very visual.
Right.
So anytime you can use... Now, let me back up and say, by visual, I don't necessarily mean PowerPoint. Now, PowerPoint's not a bad tool. The problem, though, with PowerPoint is it's used for that sequential, bullet-by-bullet thing we were talking about in principle one.
Right.
It's used for logic rather than emotion.
Yep.
So if you can put both a visual and the bullets on a slide, you are providing a visual to help the memory of that. And I use a lot of props. So if you can find props that enhance your message,
right,
you're much farther ahead.
Okay.
Now, let me give you a simple example. There.
Sure.
In one of my presentations, it's a factoid that a lot of presenters know. It says something like, this newspaper contains more information than the average person would have encountered in the 1600s.
Sure.
The person who's not using Learnertainment will say, a newspaper contains more information than was present in the 1600s.
Mm-hmm.
What I try to do is I try to hold up a newspaper and say, this newspaper contains more information. It's a much more potent message.
Sure, and then you can drop it on the floor. It makes a nice loud thunk.
Yeah. I'll give you an example from a political arena. Ronald Reagan, doing a State of the Union speech once, wanted to prove that the federal government, in his eyes, was out of control.
Okay.
And he did that very thing you just talked about, Dan. He presented the entire budget, which was about three heavy bound books, maybe four or five,
uh-huh,
and dropped them all on the table next to the podium,
uh-huh,
and then said, now have you read all of these? And it was obvious, and it made his point.
Right. See, there you go. If it's good enough for a Hollywood president, then it's good enough for most presenters.
All right, then principle four harkens back to my past as a magician. And principle four says, suggestions guide outcomes.
Okay.
There's a whole theory called accelerated learning built around the work of a Bulgarian researcher named Georgi Lozanov.
Okay.
And Georgi Lozanov believed that everything the presenter did had to be in sync with the materials that the presenter, in the way they did things, provided suggestions. And those suggestions were more important than what was said. You can think of a simple example of that where somebody tells you they're really glad to see you and their handshake is limp and they're just not looking at you.
Yeah.
And they've communicated the opposite of what they said. Now, as a magician, think about what a magician is asking somebody to do, and I believe it's very similar to what an educator or a trainer is asking.
Mm-hmm.
A magician is asking you to allow him to trick you.
Right.
So in other words, I'm going to make a fool out of you, but it's for your own benefit, so trust me and relax and enjoy it.
Right.
It's a lot to ask, but it works for a magician. And the
right.
reason it works is because the audience member knows that the magician is doing it for their benefit. Okay, so where I'm going with this is any sort of presentation is much the same way. You are manipulating the audience members for their benefit. So you have to suggest to them what you want them to pay attention to, what you want them to focus on, and you have to suggest through your demeanor, and we'll get into this a bit more in a couple of minutes, but you have to suggest that the outcomes you want, and to the trainee, all this stuff should just appear as if by magic. And
okay.
So that's the action step. Make the presentation magical. No seams. Suggest the positive outcome you want by everything in that environment.
Okay. Well, so in that vein, so one, that sounds like a lot of work.
It's a ton of work.
But, you know, if it's worth corralling 5, 10, 100, 1,000 people in a room to give them a presentation, then maybe it's worth some effort to make it worth it for you as the presenter and for them as the people being there. A magic show, especially, you know, professional magic, is a very highly controlled environment. And, you know, in many cases, speakers don't have all that much control over their environment. So are there sort of baby steps that we can drop in for people to make progress in that?
There are, clearly. And let me skip ahead a couple principles, because we're actually starting to step into principle eight, which is the performer sends a message.
Okay.
Because you may not be able to control the environment.
Sure.
But if you think back to the second step, which was about harnessing humor.
Yep.
If you are at ease and comfortable and something goes wrong in the environment, then it's not that you did it. It's that you and your attendees are sharing it together.
Okay.
Think about the manager, for instance, who comes into a staff meeting and BlackBerry's going off so much that every 2 seconds he's stopping what he's presenting and looking at his BlackBerry.
Mm-hmm.
Or think about, we did one political example praising the Republicans, so let's give one knocking a Republican. George Bush the First, in that debate with Bill Clinton and Ross Perot, had a watch on. And the camera caught him looking at his watch.
Yeah.
And to many of the viewers out there, it looked like he was bored.
Yeah, right.
The whole thing. So your behavior sends a message, and so you should do everything possible to be absolutely in the moment and at one with the audience and solely focused on them. And now this may not mean controlling the entire environment, but it means being completely in the game and there for them.
Okay, that makes sense.
And if you think about this emotional thing we were talking about, if a attendee's looking at you and you're not engaged and you don't believe it, how do you expect them to?
Sure, right. Okay.
So your behavior suggests the outcomes. And you think if the magician really focused on the mechanics of what's going on, it would bore the audience silly. They wouldn't believe it.
Right.
But instead, the magician creates this illusion that these amazing things are going to happen.
Sure.
So back to principle 4.
Right.
The goal for the presenter is to present the illusion that you can learn this.
Right.
This is great stuff. This is the best stuff I've ever talked about. I'd rather do this than anything.
Right.
With you.
Right, and turn the illusion into reality.
Yes.
Okay.
And that's what Hollywood does all the time.
Right. You know, actually, ironically, one of the songs that I wrote while at Berkeley and that won an award in the songwriting competition was called Illusion Reality.
Oh, there you go.
Something's hearkening to me here.
So principle 5, and that's a good transition. Principle 5 is audio signals trump visuals.
Okay.
Now, we're a very auditory society, even though we don't think so. Many folks have to have sound on in the background. In fact, the old saying of whistling through the graveyard happens because people can't stand silence.
Right.
You can do an experiment really easily. Put a video on that doesn't need the sound.
Yep.
And put that on in a room and see how long it takes before somebody starts talking.
Right.
Most likely it's going to be 15 seconds.
Okay.
What I think is going on is, let me offer one other example. There was a time when there was a choice that the public could make between visual only or visual with audio.
Uh-huh.
And they went for visual with audio. And I'm speaking about silent film industry when the talkies came in.
Yes, right.
And within a year, the silent film industry was gone.
Right.
The audio, I believe, is as important and maybe more so than the visual. And particularly using music. And the action step for this is mix in music. Because now it's hard to say for sure, but it appears that music was the original language. And by that, I mean modulation and pitches. So it's very deep. Very much in our subconscious, it reaches us emotionally in a way language can't do unless it's in a good story. So going back to the trainee or the attendee who's made to attend, walks in a room and hears a song that just makes them feel good.
Mm-hmm.
It's hard for the holistic centers to be all worried about survival. It's hard to be angry when you're feeling good because there's good music playing.
Right. Okay.
So, I mean, I could talk for hours on this music thing because there's all sorts of ways to use it.
Right. Yeah, well, why don't we spend at least a couple more minutes on that then? Because, even though I have a music background, I almost never put music into my presentations as either, pre-show, warm-up or whatever, or during breaks or in the actual presentation itself.
Okay. So I can give you a couple quick and easy things you can use or
sure.
things you can do.
Okay.
You want to play up-tempo, and by up-tempo I mean fairly fast, but not racehorse fast, music
okay. yep.
at the start of a session.
Okay.
So that when people walk in, they're feeling a happy, positive environment.
Right.
You also want to do that on breaks. A couple other things you can do is when you ask people to talk to each other in small groups or work
mm-hmm.
alone,
okay.
put some soft, quiet, slower music on.
Okay.
When you want people to get involved in some sort of frantic activity,
mm-hmm.
put some fast music on. Now, let me also say, Dan, that in both of the cases I just talked about, where they're either reflecting or by themselves or working as a group, you do not want songs with lyrics.
Right, yep.
And the reason is because people pay attention to the lyrics.
Yes, right.
So a general rule of thumb is use songs with lyrics when you want the lyrics to be noticed. Use songs without lyrics when you want the music to fade into the background.
Right. Oh, actually, you know, my father, who's now a retired college professor, so had to grade god-awful, you know, tons and tons of papers and tests and whatnot. He used to listen to Gregorian chant while he was doing that because it was something that he didn't speak.
Yes, and like Gregorian chant is an example of something that has vocals but isn't really vocal because you can't tell what the lyrics
are. Exactly. Yeah, even if you know Latin, it still might not help you.
Another way I use music all the time, and this definitely goes back to the club days, is if you have that point in the presentation where people are just nodding off and it's time for a break, call a break and put on some Johnny B. Good, Chuck Berry kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
On the other hand, you've just done an activity and everybody is so worked up that you need to calm the room down.
Right.
Call a break and put on some slow-moving Mozart.
Okay, yep.
And you can control the emotion in the room and manipulate them for their own good to the place you need them to be.
Right. Okay. Those are some good tips.
There's one other thing I want to say about music and sound effects. Don't use them just to use them.
Yeah.
Because that is totally annoying. Use them when you have a purpose for using them and be specific about that purpose. I'm using this here because of this. And 6 weeks later, just because you're bored with your presentation, don't change out the music. They haven't heard it before.
Sure, right. Right. Well, it is important to keep yourself engaged. So if you have to change it a little bit, to your point, though, just don't change it because it's time for change.
Yeah, let me try something else. I'll put this on and not really thinking it through is all
right,
I'm trying to say.
Well, you know, I think all this, it is interesting because I think what's sort of unique about you and I, at least on the music side, if you have performed music live, and what was your instrument, by the way?
I was a keyboard player.
Okay, so me too. Although I occasionally would play guitar, things like that. Anytime, you know, if you have an instrument failure while you're performing, you need to be able to adapt to that and keep going. You know, the show must go on, and be, you know to anticipate things like that so that you have a plan for how to maintain how you're going on. And I think in general, if people in a business setting, if they don't have any sort of performing arts sort of background, all of this stuff is kind of brand new. So it's probably a bit overwhelming.
Yeah, I would think it might be. But let me say that none of it's hard to do.
Sure.
It just requires being aware.
Right. Well, if they don't know what is possible to do, I mean, you know, most people want to kill people with text in their PowerPoint slides, for example, and you know, bringing in things like, you know, to principle three there on the visuals, you know, don't throw a visual up there either, just because you think you need to throw a visual. It needs to tie into what you're talking about. It shouldn't be something completely random. It's just, oh, I'm sick of having so much text on the screen, so this slide I'm going to put a picture of a bird, even though it has nothing to do with anything.
Right. And thank you for bringing that out, because that's a good point. Another thing that folks can do to get a better feel for this,
mm-hmm.
particularly for the audio, is if there's a movie they're very used to,
mm-hmm.
watch the movie. Or rather, let me rephrase that. Hear the movie.
Mm.
Don't watch it. Listen
okay.
to it. Listen for the music. Listen to what they're using. When you feel sad, listen for the music that's used.
Right.
And then when you watch the movie again, watch it for how the plot builds. Watch it for how it connects. Watch it for how they use visual things to tell a story without saying it.
Mm-hmm.
And if you really focus in on stuff like that, these principles become easier to comprehend.
Right. Okay, great. So principle six?
Is multiple perspectives deepen meaning.
Yes.
This goes back to that logic thing with point A following point B, following or B following A, following and C, and so on and so on and so on.
Yep.
And this, I believe, is where a lot of presenters go wrong, is everything is solely focused on the point of the moment. But let me offer a simple example.
Sure.
Say you're in a corporation and you're trying to teach people how to pay themselves via a new software program. You're trying to teach them how to pay correctly.
Mm-hmm.
Well, to the corporation and the trainers, this is about paying correctly.
Right.
But to the attendee, if you put it in that context, it's a requirement. It's not something they're really eager to learn.
Sure.
However, if you change the context, if you add another perspective, and that perspective is pay allows you to have a great life, and if you get paid properly, you can go out to eat, you can spend time with your kids, you can enjoy the world. It's kind of the what they used to call the with them, what's in it for them.
Mm-hmm.
But it's the emotional what's in it for them. Well, learning how to pay yourself correctly is so you can enjoy your life. So if you have that as the context within which you're talking all your other points, then all of a sudden you have a marvelous yardstick to determine if the point you want to talk is really relevant to that, or if it's not, then you can throw it out. And you have a way to continually tie back whatever you're saying to the learner need.
Sure.
So that's one aspect of it, multiple perspectives. Another aspect is to try to use as many different techniques as possible. There's a theory out there that we don't have a lot of time to go into in our limited time together, but I would also encourage your listeners to become familiar with it. It's called multiple intelligences.
Okay, yep.
And it's from a fellow named Howard Gardner, and his theory is that people are intelligent in different ways.
Sure, right.
So whenever I put a program together, what I try to do is use all of Gardner's intelligences to ensure that not more than 5 minutes goes by without me doing something for each intelligence.
Okay.
So you just try to teach it from as many aspects as possible, not from your narrow focus on what you need to get done, and you try to teach everything within the context of the emotional takeaway for the learner.
Okay. And I think when I was reading some of the articles you had sent me in advance of this, I fell into an interesting little path that I've been on recently. The multiple perspective things you talk about, Leonardo da Vinci, and how he would always look at things from three or four perspectives at a minimum to make sure that he understood it. So like a drawing of a hand from the front, the back, the side, face on, in a mirror, whatever. And the same sort of thing applies to just the more that you're able to examine something, and either, even just in a visual plane, the more you're likely to understand it. In this case, you're talking about different types of intelligences beyond the normal IQ testing sort of thing. There's emotional intelligence, and there are other sorts of intelligences.
Right. So let's take that thing we were talking about with bullets and pictures on a PowerPoint slide.
Sure.
If you have the bullets that talk the logical steps to something, and you have a visual, and I don't mean a graphic, I don't mean a flow chart.
Yep.
I mean some sort of holistic visual for what you're talking about right next to it. You have taught it in two ways.
Sure.
And then if you instead of regurgitating the bullets on the slide, if you talk it in a different way verbally,
yep,
and tie it into a piece of music or a story or some sort of metaphorical example, you've taught it in three or four ways.
Sure.
And you have a better chance of them getting it because you're, rather than making them come to you, you're going to them.
Sure. Okay. And there's another idea that frequently gets mentioned in presenting styles where you tell them what you're going to tell them, then tell them, and then tell them what you told them.
Yeah, I'm not a big fan of that.
Okay.
And here's why. I would rather an event, I grant you, because adults like to be in control, you have to tell them enough so that they know what's going to happen.
Okay, yep.
Without giving it away.
Sure.
But I like to design a program like a novel where you're turning the pages and you just can't wait to get to the end because you want to see how it comes out.
Okay.
I like to hold anticipation, to keep them listening, to make them want to know how it ends.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't want to tell them what I'm going to tell them beyond just the bare bones. I want it to unfold like a good book.
Right. No, that's fair enough. But even that gets to the point. So, just like in a movie or a good book or whatever it might be, you have some inkling of what might happen, and usually the trick is in foiling that so that the majority of the people didn't anticipate what was coming.
Yeah, take the movie Titanic. Even though we all know the ship sinks,
right?
The movie doesn't start saying, okay, this ship's going to sink.
Right. Yeah, exactly. And how long was that? 3 hours? 3.5 hours?
Yeah, something like that. So I guess we're doing good. We have one left.
Yeah.
And it's number 7.
Okay.
The performance sends a message. Now, okay. We tapped in on this a little bit earlier.
Yep.
So the action step for this is stage the surroundings. Now, granted, you can't always control that. But you can in some ways. For instance, I speak at a lot of conferences.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm always in the room early, and I don't just make sure my setup looks right before the attendees get in there. I also walk the aisles and pick up all the trash between the seats from the last presentation. If half-filled bottles of water are up on the stage, I remove them.
Sure.
If there are handouts left in a cardboard box, I remove them. It's my environment. I need to be in control as much as possible. So I try to stage the whole surroundings, because my theory is that that cardboard box over your left shoulder says you don't really care that much about what things look like.
Sure, right. Okay. And even though in theory it should be somebody else's job to set up the room for you, ultimately it's your presentation, your training session, whatever, so take some ownership over that.
Yeah, think about the magician that doesn't attend every detail.
Yeah.
The thing won't work. Or the musician, too, that says, well, we can get by without the drummer. We don't really need that today. So it's a question of professionalism, and I think it's incumbent on any presenter to do everything they can to make the surroundings look the best possible.
Yeah.
Within their ability to control it. And some of that means, frankly, just showing up early and schmoozing with the technical folks and asking for some table skirting rather than saying, well, those wires are hanging out, but the text did that. I didn't do that, so that's okay.
Yeah, right. Yeah, the details can certainly add up to either creating a positive and controlled, effective environment or to make it look kind of like a shambles.
Because what's going to happen is the attendee at some point is going to get bored with you.
Right.
And start looking around.
Right.
And you don't want them focusing on that ugly-looking box that was left by the last guy.
Yep. Right. Unless you're purposely doing some misdirection so you can yank their attention back.
Well, yeah, and that's how magicians do it. That's exactly how they do it. They are fanatical about controlling their environment. Likewise, a Hollywood movie. Okay, let's take Titanic again. We've been picking on that. So imagine you've got Titanic and a U.S. Air Force jet flies across the top of the ship.
Yeah.
It would destroy the illusion.
Right.
And the same thing is true in a training environment or a presentation, although it's on a much smaller scale, but it is just as true. So if I could recap, then the principles are evoke emotion, use laughter, use visuals, try to suggest the outcomes you want through everything you do, use music and auditory cues, use as many perspectives as possible, pay attention to your surroundings because they send a message, so stage them. And perfect your own performance so that you come across as credible.
Okay.
And if you do those eight things, you'll find your learner training.
Okay. Well, that's great. I guess, you know, aside from the audio and music side, I think in general, I'm trying to use all of these things. You know, do you have any tips on the performer sending a message front on should people be making sure that they either do test runs or that they are videotaping their sessions so that they can review them later?
Yeah, all good questions. I have an iPod and I record every session so that I can hear myself.
Okay.
It's a question of getting rid of those ums, getting your posture right. There's a question that comes up too, to script or not to script.
Yeah.
I'm a big believer in scripting.
Okay.
And all my presentations are heavily scripted. It's because you're working out the right way to say a word.
Sure.
Just so it gets the reaction you want every time.
Right.
And the difference, well, Dan, let me ask you a question. It's a trick question, so I'm giving away the answer already.
Okay.
Is it fair to say that Robin Williams is a great ad-libber?
Yes.
Yeah, he can ad-lib well, but what he really is a great memorizer.
Mm.
See, what all those guys do is they have a collection of stuff filed in their heads.
Right.
That they pull out. Now, can you imagine how crazy you'd make yourself if every show were completely different? No, even Robin Williams, if you saw him 5 days a week, you'd get similarities. If you saw him 5 months straight, you would start to see the same stuff crop up over and over and over.
Oh, yeah.
The trick is not in memorizing all that stuff. The trick is in making it so fluent that it looks like it's just coming off the top of your head.
Sure.
In other words, it's advanced preparation, whether that is actually scripting or thinking it through or whatever. But advanced preparation allows you to think through all the problems before they happen and have a solution already designed. You find out where your fault lines are in your presentation.
Right.
Come up with tools for getting around them. And you make yourself better. So, yes, absolutely. Videotape, audio tape, practice in front of a mirror. Do it for your wife or your husband or your friends. Ask them what they think. But practice, practice, practice. That's how you perfect your performance. And the Hollywood stars do not get up in front of a camera and just talk.
Right.
They spend months in preparation.
Right, yeah, right. And they have the luxury of pausing the camera, whereas live performance is a slightly different boat.
Yeah, so the more you can work out your movements, your mannerisms, your speech, your posture, what you wear, the more effective you can be. Now, this is not to say to become a robot, but it's just like at one point you had to think about driving your car.
Right.
And now your car just gets to work.
Right.
So what you should try to do with the presentation is get it to the point where you no longer have to think about it, and it all just comes out. And then that's where the true magic and music starts to happen. Once you know it so well that you no longer have to focus on it, it's in your subconscious, and it just flows, and it looks like magic.
Right, right, which is why I certainly found that I've played classical music and jazz and rock and pop and all sorts of stuff, and a lot of my early piano training was classical and reading it off the page, and it was a lot more like drudgery than it was fun at that point, as a young boy. And once I found out about jazz and hearing things by ear and playing them back and things like that, then suddenly music became a lot more fun, and that's why I ended up going to Berkeley instead of going into computer science.
Sure. Now let's take a Van Cliburn type person of the world. Do you suppose it's as boring for them as you're describing? And I would suggest not.
No, right.
What I would suggest instead is they've learned the notes so well that now they can focus on making music.
Right. Right, exactly. Or like Glenn Gould, and it just kind of flows out of them in every pore.
Yeah. And I would say the same thing would be true of a Charlie Parker, that they know the rules and the flows of the material so well that they can do what appears to be improvisation, but really what it is using your expertise
right.
to channel look like it. It's flowing.
Right. Yep. Great. Well, I think that was a great run through the 8 principles of Learnertainment, and I know it certainly helps nail things down a bit more for me and reinforce some things I was doing and make me aware of some things that I'm going to pay some more attention to moving forward. So, for me, this is certainly great, and hopefully for the people listening or reading to this, once it's transcribed, they will get something out of it. Let me sum up again on what we were discussing today. The title of the podcast is Learnertainment, Making Learning Engaging and Entertaining. And I was speaking today with Len Milbauer, who is the Learnertainment trainer. You can find out more about him at www.offbeattraining.com. His email address is lenmilbauer@offbeattraining.com, and again, to spell his name is LENNMILLBOWER @offbeattraining.com. And thanks again so much for your time. This is a lot of fun.
Oh, I'm glad to do it. And to any of you listening, I love to talk about this stuff. Maybe you can tell that already.
Right.
Feel free to email, and let's keep a conversation going, because we've got a lot of folks out there that need a lot of learning, and we can all help them.
Right. Yeah, and there's some great examples of you doing your thing on your site as well.
Thank you.
Yeah, great. Well, thanks again.
Okay, stay offbeat, huh?
All right.